following is Eric Rice's talk, Why the Mad Men Are Mad at Us, from the 2014 Information Architecture Summit. The 2014 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's All You Can Learn. Stay tuned after the podcast for more information about All You Can Learn.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much for getting up at 9:30 on a Sunday morning. I realize that this is what we call in the industry the death slot, because everybody wants this. I mean, you've been karaokeing until 4 in the morning, and so I figured I'd bribe you with Bloody Marys, and so some of you have Bloody Marys. Very good. We do what we can. See, bribery is kind of how advertising works. Completely disreputable profession. How many of you watch Mad Men on TV? Quite a few of you. Okay. For those of you who don't, both of you, you can be an ad man, which means you work for an advertising agency, but most of the advertising agencies were centered on and around Madison Avenue in New York. So that's where Mad Men come from. It's not necessarily because they're angry, but I was quite pleased that I got this picture of Don Draper because he looked very, very upset. I want to introduce you to Jacques Zeguela, who you've probably never heard of. He was François Mitterrand's director of communications when François Mitterrand was president of France. Zeguela is credited with having said, "Don't tell my mother I work in advertising. She thinks I play the piano in a whorehouse." I mean, that's kind of where advertising sits in the grand scheme of things. All right, I've won a lot of awards. I've been nominated for a Clio. I've been in this business for a long time, and I'm pretty good at what I do. But what really gives me the authority to speak about advertising is that I actually have played piano in a whorehouse. I think I'm the only person in advertising who's that. Big Al Mothershead had a whorehouse above a flea market in St. Louis, above his... Oh, never mind. But it was a very depressing experience. And if any of you are contemplating a career change, let me tell you, playing piano in a whorehouse on Saturday afternoons is not a good thing. This is nap time, okay? There are no customers. I'm the only person who has ever worked at a whorehouse and left a virgin. That's how bad it was. What can I say? But it gives me a unique insight into advertising. Somehow. You work that out. Advertise means to notify, to call public attention to, especially in order to sell. This is a notice from ancient Thebes, about 1300 BC. "For the return of my slave to the shop of Hapu the weaver, a whole gold coin is offered." This is communication. Now, see, Hapu the weaver was not content with just trying to advertise that he wanted his slave back. Instead, "The shop of Hapu the weaver, where the best cloth is woven to your desires." It's the earliest ad I could find. Hapu just couldn't resist, you know, saying, "Hey, I'm really good at what I do." That's advertising. Our problem in the UX community, how many of you actually have worked at advertising agencies? Ooh, surprising number. Okay, good. Then I hope you'll agree with this. Maybe this is just my own perspective, but I think it's true, all right? And if you think I'm full of shit, just call out or have another Bloody Mary or go to see John Colco, you know, whatever. The problem I've experienced is that if we do not understand how the Don Drapers of the world think, we can't really expect them to understand how we think. And there is a tremendous schism between what we do in UX and IA and what people in advertising do. And so that's kind of what I wanted to introduce you to today, so that you understand why the advertising industry consistently fucks up and why we have so much trouble trying to communicate our message. There are three good ways to ensure that we never get invited back to that table. And the first is, and these are real bullets, by the way, these are Remington self-loaders. So, insisting that we invented user research, misunderstanding the concept of concept, And finally, humiliating established art directors. That's about the worst thing that you can possibly do. So let's take a look at this. Brief history of advertising. Now, we all know that Jacob Nielsen invented user testing. Jacob. The truth is that... Right. This is an advertisement written by a fellow by the name of John Caples back in 1925. As you can see, it's a coupon ad. It's rather a lot of copy, text. They left when I sat down at the piano, but when I started to play, this advertisement taught the United States how to play the piano. In the days before we had Netflix and whatever, people had to make their own entertainment. So they learned to sing and they learned to play the piano and other things. John Caples' ad ran for almost 50 years with incredible success. And they changed the visuals, they updated it, and so on. But the point is, this is probably one of the most effective coupon ads in the history of advertising. Tested advertising methods, now in its fifth edition. It has been in print since 1932. This is the man that invented A-B testing. Do not go into an advertising agency and start to lecture them on testing. We know this. We know this. Except nothing is true about what works best in UX until it has been scientifically tested. 1932. Let's move on. Okay, yeah, but see, we understand research. Well, this ad was written by Claude Hopkins in 1908. Now, Claude Hopkins was approached by the Van Camps Company. The Van Camps got their start during the Civil War in the United States in the 1860s, and they could put things in tins and they wouldn't spoil. And this was very good because you could give the tins to the troops and they could, you know, open them with bayonets, and this is before can openers, by the way, and they got a hearty meal. Pork and beans, which kind of became the signature product for Van Camps, is actually very difficult to make. And so what Hopkins did was, well, he went down to the diners, he went down to the docks, he talked to the people who ate pork and beans, and he talked to the people who made pork and beans to try and find out why this was good. Try our rivals, too. He's not scared. He's not scared of this at all. He spent a lot of time talking to these people. And he wrote two books, My Life in Advertising and Scientific Advertising. Now listen to this. Talk to the people who are going to buy your product. This is the first step in any successful campaign. 1930. How many of you are still fighting with your employers or your clients to get them to do user research? Thank you. Well, if you go into an advertising agency, don't start talking about this because the advertising people understand this. We've got B.J. Fogg. He talks about questioning, and Christina Halverson. She has taught us about content. David Ogilvy wrote this ad in 1960 to introduce the Rolls-Royce to North America. At 60 miles an hour, the loudest noise in this new Rolls-Royce comes from the electric clock, to which the engineers at Rolls-Royce said, we've got to do something about that damn clock. It's a long ad. There is a lot of content on that page, and yet it introduced a brand to the United States, which today is an icon for classy cars. He wrote two books, Mr. Ogilvy. The first was The Confessions of an Advertising Man. This was the first time that anyone actually started to talk about advertising in public because, you know, we all play pianos in whorehouses, all right? This book, Ogilvy on Advertising, if you have not read it, order it today and read it because it will keep you out of a lot of very eggy situations when you deal with advertising people. It's a very easy, readable book, and I beg you to take this seriously because this man knew what it was about. Listen to this. What really decides consumers to buy or not to buy is the content of your advertising, not its form. Content strategy? C- come on, darlings, you know, old wine in new bottles. Let's meet a couple of other people. This is Ross Reeves. He talks about the USP. How many of you have been shown a list of USPs by your clients? Quite a few. Your clients are assholes. Do you know what USP stands for? Unique selling proposition. Unique means one. It's not a fucking feature list. All right? How many of you remember the Creative Zen? None of you. All right, the Creative Zen came out around 1999. It was a 5 gigabyte MP3 player with a really good algorithm. You remember? It wasn't so much a brick, Michael. Excuse me? Yeah, that's right. It was round and it was purple and whatever. And they advertise it as,
we are a 5 gigabit MP3 player.
And in a whole room of geeks, virtually none of us remember it. How many of you know what an iPod is? Oh, amazing. The iPod understood the concept of the USP. Thousands of songs in your pocket. That's a USP. Ross Reeves came up with this. Does anyone know what the tagline is for M&M's? Amazing. Amazing. After 60 years, half of this room remembers what Ross Reeves wrote. Very good. This is Leo Burnett. He started an agency in Chicago. He talked about finding the drama. He invented the Marlboro Man, who died of lung cancer, by the way. He also invented the Jolly Green Giant, and he invented Tony the Tiger. We'll get back to Leo. He's an important figure. Bill Birnbach, one of the few Jews in an otherwise WASP-dominated industry, to all people of color, women, this is a very closed arena, and I apologize for that. That's just the way it is, and let's try and change that. But if you say, well, why are there no blacks or Asians or whatever, it's because these people, these groups have not necessarily been able to get into this industry. And I think that is absolutely despicable. 30 years after the Equal Rights Amendment, we still have problems getting women into advertising and getting people of color and so on. This is not good. Bill Birnbach started to change that. How many of you know DDB? Have you heard? Well, that's Doyle Dane Birnbach. Meet Mr. Birnbach. And he was the one who came up with We Try Harder. He also did the Volkswagen campaign. Actually, he was smart enough to hire this woman, Phyllis Robinson, to write the Volkswagen campaign. So not only did they start hiring Jews, they started hiring women. So that was kind of interesting. So DDB, God bless you. Thank you for that. You started to change things. I want to introduce you to the Mattel CNC. How many of you are familiar with this? Oh, good. How many of you are not familiar with this? All right. Mike Atherton, what kind of a cave do you live in that you've never seen a CNC?
I was raised by wolves.
He was raised by wolves. I believe that. You know, this man brought me bear meat from Helsinki. Yeah. Well, as a public service, not for you lot, but only for Mike Atherton, I actually have a CNC. So, this is the most well-traveled CNC in the world. I bought it on eBay. It was made in China, so apparently it's crossed the Pacific. It ended up in Iowa, and then they sent it to my home in Denmark, and it's been across the Atlantic several times now. So, it's more traveled than most people in Davenport. So, now, see, Mike, let me show you how this works. See, we have different animals here, okay? So, pick an animal.
I think maybe a coyote.
Oh, excellent, excellent. A very good choice. So, we point the thing at the coyote, then pull that string.
The coyote goes.
It is quite wonderful. And the duck goes and the dog goes and oh, the consultant goes, it depends. Well, so this is the CNCE. And in advertising, we consider the CNCE absolutely to be the lowest form of advertising. Absolutely useless. Let me explain why. I spent all night working on this. It's the first animated GIF I've ever done. And you're saying, well, what was that about? That was the problem in a nutshell. See? We'll do it again. See? That is a CNCE. We'll do it again. I'm quite proud of that. Thank you. Thank you. In the communications industry, we talk about something called AIDA. That's the model. Awareness, interest, desire, and action. So when you have like 1.7 seconds and you're trying to get people to read your advertisement while they're leafing through a magazine, you need to catch their attention. Then you have to make it interesting in some way. And at one point, you want them to actually desire a product and actually go to the store or fill out the coupon or call the toll-free number, whatever course of action you've given them. Now, the thing is, there's a line that runs through this, and this is where the advertising agencies and those of us in interactive media go in different directions, because the traditional art directors think that if they're going to do a website, they have to start with awareness. The point is, nobody goes into a website or downloads an app by accident.
Well, you know, I wanted to see what the weather was going to be like in San Diego, but okay, you know, I'll buy a new suitcase. All right.
It doesn't work that way. This is a critical divide that the advertising industry does not understand. And this is where we start to fight with the art directors. It's sad, but this is what we do. Now, back to Leo Burnett. This is absolutely interesting. The secret of all effective originality in advertising is not the creation of new and tricky words and pictures, but of putting familiar words and pictures into new relationships. That is good advertising, and that does not mean a CNCE. So, okay, all you IAs, what would you label this picture?
Landscape.
What?
Landscape.
Right. What kind of a landscape? Winter landscape. Good. This is what we do. A link is a promise. When you click on winter landscape, you expect to come to a page that will deal with a winter landscape. Do we agree on this? Would this catch anybody's attention if they're leafing through a magazine? No. So instead, we'll do something else. Scene of the crime. Whoa. No blood. No footprints. This is fascinating. We have got to read. What do they mean by scene of the crime? So this is what we do in advertising, but if you use scene of the crime as a link, it's not going to work. The things that make us good online are exactly the things that make us shit offline. And the advertising people think that what makes them brilliant offline also apply online, and it doesn't work. That is the problem. Here are some things that are not CNCEs. HSBC, the Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, has had the longest running and most successful advertising campaign in the history of financial advertising. This is beautiful. In the future, there will be no difference between waste and energy, and they've got banana peels as windmills. This is lovely. Very clever. A fish with a barcode. In the future, transport networks will think for themselves. And in terms of a CNCE, look at this. Wonderful. Style, soldier, survivor. That's a CNCE, but they've given it a twist. Only by understanding what people value can we better meet their needs. This is good advertising. This is lovely. Es gibt günstigere Autovermieter als Sixt. There are better car rental agencies than Sixt. And this is on a jetway at an airport, and so Pinocchio's nose grows as the thing expands. Lovely, lovely way. So what makes the CNCA the lows for advertising? Basically, these things rely on eye-catching irrelevancies. See, there was absolutely no point to bring a Spitfire into this, but this is the kind of thing that bad advertisers do. Are you the picture of health? This is HP. You would think that a company like HP knew better, but apparently not. Their advertising sucks. I'm sorry, we're here in San Diego, but I'm not going to pull any punches. They have some of the shittiest advertising out there. Okay, pop quiz. Australia, ahead by leaps and bounds. What do you think is in the visual? Kanger fucking ruse. Absolutely. This is, without question, one of the most talentless ads ever produced. Happily, this is only for the Invest in Australia company. The Tourist Board does great stuff. They like, hey, we've shampooed the camels and we've laid on a great sunset, so where the hell are you? You know, oh, where the bloody hell are you? That was. They do good ads. This is crap. You can also force a CNCA. This is quite odd. This is like a Coke machine. A cold drink would be nice, but it would be great if I could find a product to help me develop more profitable customer relationships. I didn't Photoshop this crap. Don't be a victim. This is Toshiba. You'd think they'd know better. And they're talking about the cost of toner, and what has happened is this photocopier has come and snatched her purse. And words cannot describe. This is quite writing for global markets. Bring the words of the world to your fingertips. And so she has a map and two desks, and she's apparently typing on both of them at the same time. Oh, bloody hell. Illustrations, okay. This is from the UPA conference. The UPA sometimes does it right. Usually they do it wrong. Patterns, blueprints for usability, it's on the edge. This is a Time magazine from a couple of years ago during the first presidential election for Obama. The race is on. This is a good headline, but if they had said, darling, you need a Bloody Mary very, very much. Are you okay? Okay, good. Who needs a Bloody Mary, by the way, at this point? Everyone. All right, they're there. The bar is open. You know, just get up and get them. You know, ignore me. I'm just going to waffle on until... If they had said the race to the White House is on, it probably would have been too close. Okay? But this is acceptable. You can also use it for logos. For example, wines. If we take something like Chateau Margaux, what is on the label? A picture of the chateau. If we take Frog's Leap, what is on the label of Frog's Leap? Come on, we're in California. A leaping frog. And if I say there's a wine called Red Truck, what do you think is on the label? A red truck, okay? That's fine. These are logos. Sex sells. Now, all of you women who think that advertising is sexist, I want to introduce you to Helen Reeser, because she's the fault. She married Stanley Reeser, who bought an agency called J. Walter Thompson in 1916, and in 1917 she started selling Woodbury soap, a skin you love to touch. Some of the sexiest ads ever done at the time of the First World War. It's Helen's fault that we have sex in advertising, so don't blame it on the men. H&M, my God, they sell sex like nobody's business. And just, you know, to try and even the playing field, we also have men in their pictures. This one I rather like. this company sells faux fur bags. And if you buy their bag, they contribute part of their revenue to protection of animals and so on. The best part of this ad is if you buy that particular purse, you can get a bikini wax. In the advertising industry, we talk about babies, boobs, and beagles. That's what sells. So we double dog dare you. It has absolutely nothing to do with the ad itself. We just have a cute kid, and so he's the eye-catching irrelevancy. But there are better ways to do it. This is Michelin. This is slightly better. Michelin, because so much is riding on your tires. The next one is absolutely bloody brilliant. Children of parents who smoke go to heaven earlier. That's a good ad. They got the kid in there, they're getting the attention, and they're selling their message. This is the American Red Cross, for God's sakes. Oh, man, she wants my bodily fluids? She can have them. This is not Photoshop. These are real ads. Sex sells. The American Red Cross, they want you to donate blood. Oh. Shower gel.
What's in your martini?
Hey, I worked in a whorehouse. I know. And then, of course, we have the beagles. Like, finding the right job can be rough. Like, what? What's the point of this dog? The Molson people, they combine sex and dogs.
Hundreds of thousands of women pre-programmed for your convenience.
And this is rather nice. It's from the Calgary Zoo. Have you heard the one about the dyslexic man who walked into a bra? No. We have pseudo-creativity. I've never understood this one for Intuit. What's your passion? It's a cute picture, but it makes no sense. This one I can't even read, and this has been hanging in the Copenhagen airport for about a year. I have no bloody clue what this is about. We have a woman who has clearly never held a cello in her life. We have a stoplight, hidden insights with high-performance analytics. I do not get it. If any of you know what this is about, send me a mail, because I'm really curious, because this is a spot that costs like hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I don't get the ad, and I see this twice a week when I go to the airport. You probably have a point. I think it's such a bad ad that I am presenting it to you lot so that you can make fun of this and tweet about it all day long and say, Eric had all these really shitty ads that he showed us. You're probably right. I mean, I have been in sales pitches where I know I sold crap, but I had a boss that said, this is the campaign, this is what we're doing. This is also why I left advertising and started my own agency. Tell the story. That's what Leo Burnett talked about. Find the drama. How are we doing? We've got 15 minutes. This, I think, is a brilliant ad for the BBC. Terrorist, hero, victim, demand a broader view. Absolutely lovely ad. This one from the streets of New York. Gaffer tape, gasoline, and a pussycat. Whatever you can imagine, we've seen worse. This is for the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Same concept used by Penn and Teller in Las Vegas.
Two words, wood chipper.
Reinventing the yes man. This man does not look like a yes man. Again, a standard phrase, a fairly stock picture, and yet put together in a new way that creates drama. That's good advertising. It is not the CNC. Apogee, I don't know how many of you know, they are a Hong Kong-based usability agency. Wonderful people. They do some of absolutely the best work in their part of the world. But advertising?
Bridging the gap between your users and your products, and your users, and a bridge, and your products. Are we all on the same page?
This is the way good information architects do ads. All right? The metadata is all in place. You know, it's all working. Well, so apparently somebody talked to the people at Apogee and said, well, you know, you could actually do this a little better. So they hired an advertising agency, and they came up with, I think this is one of the most brilliant ads I've seen in a long time, because usable interfaces live forever. They are talking about Asia. We know that the abacus is still in use. I've seen people who can do things on an abacus faster than I can do it on a calculator. Brilliant ad. Simple designs promote use. Lovely. At which point, apparently, Apogee decided, we don't need no sneaking advertising agency. And so we're
lighting the path for your users.
It's like, well, where did this come from? That's sad, because they were on the right track, but they didn't understand what the advertising industry or the creatives were bringing to the table. The ad agencies don't always get it right either. This is an advertisement that was done by my former agency to advertise sort of a desktop firewall. The idea was that people were taking their laptops, they were going out on vacation, they were logging into all kinds of networks, they were coming back with viruses, and when they came in behind the firewall and tapped in back at the office, that all kinds of bad things were being spread. So the idea of this particular software product was to keep the Vira and other things concentrated within the individual laptop and not let them go out into the network. So my old agency did this. It only takes one bad laptop to bring down your entire network, and they've built this house of cards. Now, they did A/B testing. I was actually the competing agency at that point, and I came up with something that was rather more lowbrow. Jimmy had a fantastic vacation, but his laptop picked up a communicable disease, and that sold 10 times as much product as the first one. So sometimes, you know, you can be too creative for your own good. Rosser Reeves, Mr. USP, says, yeah, you want fine writing or you want your fucking sales to go up? And that's really what it's about. So let's talk about concept. In advertising, the concept is the big idea. It's look and feel. This is from Land Rover. So you got this mountain goat on top of the car, which I think is quite lovely. But in our world, this is the kind of stuff we have. Are you not sure what your website should look like? This is how we're selling concept? Oy. The advertisers think the concept is look and feel, and we know the concept, at least in terms of interactive media, is a question of function. And this is a very difficult thing to communicate to the traditional advertising community, precisely because of AIDA, because of this awareness, interest, desire, action. There's only one proof of concept, and that's sales in advertising. This is an advertisement for a company that sells cement factories, and believe it or not, I have sold cement factories. We needed to create an ad that would get people to sign up for service agreements. So this is what we came up to. Sometimes a simple upgrade is all you need. This sold $5 million worth of product within the first 2 weeks. And there is not a cement factory in the picture. But let me explain how art directors think. We had a client that sold something called OSS. What the hell did OSS stand for? But it had to do with all these software services. I can't remember what it was. It was software that was designed for the telcos so that they could do roaming charges correctly and handoffs and all of this stuff. What the hell did OSS mean? Anyway, the problem was it was a really quirky piece of software. I mean, it wasn't just something shrink-wrapped. It was something that you really had to work on and customize because every telco was a little different. Deutsche Telekom was not the same as British Telecom, which wasn't the same as Vodafone, which wasn't the same as AT&T, and so on and so forth. So there was a lot of tweaking to be done. You couldn't just open this. Operational support systems. Operational support systems, that was it. Yeah, OSS. Operational support systems. So that's the software. And the company color was blue. So now we will be the art director and say, ooh, but that's boring. So we'll change it to green. Oh, and they have this swish that we have to live with. That's rather bright, that white. We'll tone that down a little bit. Thank you. There's something slightly yin and yang about this, isn't it? So. Okay, we have this operational support system software. Well, we clearly want to appeal to the business community. So what would be the opposite if we're going to go the yin and yang route? What? Shit. I don't know. Ooh, tattoos. We'll do tattoos. So, off-the-shelf OSS solutions are great if you have off-the-shelf customers. That was the campaign, sold a lot of product. But that's kind of the creative process, and it's very different from what we do in our particular arena. And we could roll this out to brochures, and this is the kind of website shit that, you know, never in my career has anyone ever said, oh, please, can't we have more PDFs? But this is the kind of stuff that people do in mock-up, and it's a shame. I want to kill a myth. Rather like the picture. All advertising is good advertising. Well, that's what they say. And it's not. Let me tell you a story. There was a Milwaukee brewer, Schlitz, that found out that people who could actually remember their advertising bought less beer from them. I'm not kidding. See, Schlitz used to have an ad. They had, you know, these macho men in often sailing or skiing or something like that. But they had a great tagline: when you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer. It was brilliant. In terms of beer advertising, this is a good tagline. Old Milwaukee, the beer that made Milwaukee famous, also a great tagline. Well, at one point, and this was in 1972, by 1976, Schlitz was the second largest brewer in the United States after Anheuser-Busch. That's rather impressive. Well, somebody got tired of this, and so in 1982, behind every Schlitz is a man who knows his beer. You know what their advertising looked like in 1984? This. They were out of business. Bad advertising hurts. In summary, I want to introduce you to Bernice Fitzgibbon. She worked primarily in the retail industry. She worked for Gimbel's, Macy's, Wanamaker's, a lot of big department stores. She wrote a book in 1967, which is really very, very interesting if you're into this kind of thing. I'm going to get back to Bernice in a minute, but I want to talk about titles. Back in 1995, we had webmasters. I mean, these were basically long gray pages. There wasn't a lot on there. But by 1998, we had a webmaster, we had a visual designer, and we had a copywriter. Does this look familiar? Good. 2000, we had a developer and a web designer and an information architect and a copywriter, maybe. So where are we today in 2014? I'm the token baby boomer. I will wait while you take your picture. Do you need my Twitter handle? Yes, it's E.L. Rice, R-E-I-S-S. It's advertising, guys. I think this is a problem because all of these people expect to be
creative,
and they're not. There is a too many cooks syndrome going on, and I don't think that with these great teams where everyone is expected to love each other and go on group hugs and whatever, that we're actually producing better product. And this is where I get back to Bernice Fitzgibbon. She says creativity varies inversely with the number of cooks involved. R-E-I-S-S. It's advertising, guys. I think this is a problem because all of these people expect to be
creative,
and they're not. There is a too many cooks syndrome going on, and I don't think that with these great teams where everyone is expected to love each other and go on group hugs and whatever, that we're actually producing better product. And this is where I get back to Bernice Fitzgibbon. She says, creativity varies inversely with the number of cooks involved in the broth. And I think that we really need to step back and be very, very careful about where we're going, because I see a lot of our disciplines being split up into little bitty pieces. And let me tell you, I think a cracker is worth more than a handful of crumbs. We have to be very careful about what we're doing. David Ogilvy said something that I think is wonderful. In all the parks, in all the cities, you won't find statues of committees. Thank you for listening. Thank you. Okay. We have 30 seconds to take questions. No questions? Okay, let's go and drink some more. Thank you very much.